Dublin.
Welcome everyone to Studio Soundtracks, the monthly program that takes listeners behind the scenes of making music for film and television. I'm your host, Chandler Poling. My guests today are both Emmy nominated and are some of the most amazing curators of outstanding music today. Aaron Forbes and Liza Richardson, welcome so much to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for having me. Seriously.
Yeah, absolute pleasure. So you both are in music supervision, music direction, but you both are curators of music overall, Liza being a DJ, Aaron being a songwriter. There's so much that you guys are involved with when it comes to creating music, but I want to kind of go right down to the basics because there's some listeners that probably won't quite understand what it is exactly you guys do because it's a bit nebulous. Songwriter people know, oh, they write the song, composer writes the music. So what does a music supervisor do, Liza? How would you describe that to somebody who's never thought about the term?
I've thought about this and been asked this question quite a few times. I think the best way to describe it is somebody that can help a filmmaker get their vision across with music by navigating the world of licensing. You know, some songs are expensive, some are not so much. You need to work with budgets and figure out how much you have for each, you know, specific music spot, song spot. And so you offer creative services, but really it's a puzzle that you're putting together and you're helping to solve. And you're helping, you know, the filmmaker just like a set designer would help their, you know, it's the director's vision or the showrunner's vision. And so you're just bringing ideas or solutions. You know, you could be solving problems, like if there's not enough money for a song that they want, you're helping to, you know, bring affordable options, you know, stuff like that.
What does it mean to you to be a music supervisor? Like, what is it? That's a great description, I feel completely, but like, what do you feel you bring to the table as a music supervisor?
I mean, when I started, I thought it was going to be different. I do think there's a lot of people that think music supervision is something different. That's why I always kind of say it like that. It's like, I'm navigating the world of licensing for other people. And so I have to have a lot of contacts with publishers, labels, managers, artists, maybe sometimes, not always, the PROs, that kind of thing. To me though, personally, what does it mean? I just thought it would be as a young DJ, growing up and trying to figure out how to make a living with my passion. You know, I thought maybe this could be it. And it turned out, you know, well, I mean, I tried different things. Like I tried A&R, I tried voiceover and stuff, but landed here. And to me, it's become like, I love running. I have a wonderful team and I love running a business. And to me, it's a great combination between left and right brain, because you've got the little bit of creative, which I would say it's like 20% maybe. and then you have the business aspect. So I don't know. That's kind of what it is for me.
That's great. That's a great kind of example, because as you said earlier, you think it's one thing, but in fact, it's quite different. Aaron, how would you describe what you do as a music director?
It's wide reaching. I guess it's kind of hard to pin down. I would say that I really resonate with the statement that was just said of creative solutions. I think that's a part of, I think, all of our jobs these days, and no matter what you do within the music industry, everything's kind of blurred, everything's moving. You're always trying to be an advocate for whatever situation you're in. If I'm coming into work, like on the documentary for Billy with RJ Keltler, you know, it's, you know, I'm trying to bring my knowledge of the taste of the artist or what RJ loves about music. And it's like, you're trying to navigate all these different areas, these different people, the personalities, you have the directors, you have, you know, I mean, there's just always a lot of different parties at play. And I'm just trying to present music in a way that is an advocate for everybody. I feel like that we find that middle ground. We don't get into the license, you know, we're not dealing with the licensing. I'm always blown away. It makes total sense that you came from being a DJ, because I think that music supervisors, the knowledge of music and how deep it goes, is truly unbelievable. I'm just trying to find the heartbeat musically, and just say like, what is that? How can I make sure that everything musically that's happening contributes to that vision? And I think that that's, if I'm music directing for a live show, like, what's the aesthetic of the artist? You can just get up there and play songs. Anybody can do that. But how do you make an experience that is very unique to that artist? And that comes along with digging in and saying like, you know, what's important to you? Like there's artists that I work with that are into meditation and sound baths and all that. Like, you know, you find ways to creatively get these things to come in. I think when you do that, it ends up satisfying a lot of different boxes that you're trying to check, if that makes sense.
How would you say that the role of music direction has changed over the years?
I mean, you know, it has changed so much within the past year with COVID. I would say it's the great accelerator of things. I mean, we get to have this conversation now. Maybe a year ago, we would have got together and done it in person. It's When I was growing up, the idea of being a music director was you wanted to get on stage. I was a musician and I had a group of people, and you're talking about the best ways to perform the songs. I don't tour anymore. I build shows. I send them out. I still do that same sort of curation process. But then it goes so much further now. And within this past year, it's, you know, we're doing tons of these huge pre-records. We're doing live streams. And I have all this knowledge now of like the video world and post-production and things that I never was exposed to. But as a music director, you're like the team captain for everybody within, you know, that you're working with. And so it all kind of comes across your plate, and you're just figuring out how to put the pieces together in the same way of how am I an advocate for the artist? How am I an advocate for the music? How can I safeguard the situation to make sure that it comes across the way that we want, that the artist wants, that the director wants, you know? Late night performances, the fact that those all became, you know, like pre-records or live streams, like that's I mix everything that I, you know, like for Billy or for Phineas or these artists, I'm also mixing those performances because I want to have that full control of when we hand it off and it gets broadcast. You know, we've done everything we possibly can to safeguard the situation so that it, you know, comes across the way that we all want it to.
On the topic of kind of curation and evolution, Liza, I'm just curious about how your career has evolved and where you have started and where you're at. Because, you know, currently you're probably at the top of the TV game, especially. I mean, doing Lovecraft Country and Watchmen and all of these things, as well as incredible films. Can you just talk a little bit about the evolution of your role from where you started and kind of how you got to where you are now?
I was just thinking about that when Aaron was talking about how things have changed. Yeah, COVID changed a lot of stuff. But I do feel like the role of the music supervisor has somehow gotten more complicated. I think we're being asked to do a lot of stuff that music producers traditionally have done, like create pre-records and have bands like these sometimes massive situations. We just did this major Wagner opera. Oh my God, it was way beyond me. Something I had never done before. But how's it has the role changed?
How has the role changed for you, you know, that you've witnessed? And yeah, just your evolution also as an artist, as a music supervisor. You know, you talk about only 20% creative, but I have a feeling it's probably much more, because I think you've contributed some pretty amazing things to media.
Well, I try to support the ideas of my filmmakers. And if they're just like, ooh, then I have to say something. But I don't often, like if I think it's pretty good, I just want to support them, really. It's not always like I'm in control of the music or I'm making all the choices. It's totally collaborative. Also, like what Aaron was saying about all the different cooks in the kitchen, the politics, you've got the studio, the network, the editors, the music editor, perhaps, although, you know, they're usually following my lead, but like the writers, everybody weighs in, the execs, the creative. So you are doing a lot of balancing. For me, I would say, I think I started out, you know, as a DJ being like a crate digger and priding myself on being a nerd and a really deep digging into deep cuts and old and new and keeping up with new stuff, but digging in old stuff and music from all over the world. And so I feel like music supervision perhaps is definitely not that. There's so many times when you need just like a song to tell a joke and everybody's got to know that song, or you need really mainstream songs rather than crate digging. So that those two things have kind of gone like that in my life. But I do feel like I get to do a lot of crate digging just out of passion. And so I'm still just really into that. And I dig still, but I put it out there more you know, as a DJ, which I'm not at KCRW anymore. So I love doing my Spotify lists, and it's really weirdly satisfying to me. I don't know why. But also I just collect vinyl and stuff. So, but I don't know if that answers your question, but to...
Well, what it does is it dispels this theory that music and your experience, especially, that music supervision is not about the crate digging and about coming up with really obscure, cool artists to put into projects, because you're being approached for, you know, your opinion on things, obviously, and to execute kind of the vision of what the director wants, similar to how Aaron is being approached to execute the vision of what the recording artist wants. Like, you guys are in service to these kind of creative powers and really trying to make sure that they get the audio experience that they want out there. So I just was, you know, hearing each other kind of describe a little bit about your jobs. Are you seeing any sort of overlaps, or do you deal at all with music supervisors, Aaron, or do you deal at all with music directors, Liza? Like, do you see any sort of similarities in the roles?
I would love to work with a music producer more. I mean, when I do work on camera stuff, which is constantly now, that's the other thing that's changed. I don't think it used to be so many bands on camera and so many, you know, situations that require on camera music when I started. But you know, I work with a lot of music producers, and but it would be, I would love to do like some major musical production that required one major music producer. I usually call on different music producers for like one spot, but it would be fun to do a whole project that requires a massive undertaking like that. And I know music supervisors do that quite a bit, but I don't think I've had the opportunity to do like a musical with a music producer. What about you, Aaron?
Yeah, I mean, I've done, you know, in the same way, pieces, you know, I've done, you know, been a composer on a film, worked with music supervisors. Oh, hey, we need this one song for this scene and this, you know, like that's pretty common, I feel like now. That's like you're saying, that's very common. Yeah. Just the other day I was being asked by some friends of, hey, we need a compelling group of people to play, but it has to actually look real and be in all those things. Yeah. I think that's maybe newer. I think, you know, probably if you look back a little further back, there's a lot of things where you're like, that doesn't quite look right. And it just kind of slid. People want it to be authentic now, more authentic, which is really great. I think it's a really interesting thing to see music directors shifting their role within a contribution to cinema or television or whatever it may be. I think because everything's being so blurred at this point, and like you're saying, so many extra little things are coming across your plate where you're like, oh, I have to produce this opera. Like, wow, where do I go with this? There's a lot of things that don't have a music producer involved, or maybe they don't have a composer, or maybe they're using library music. So then it does help to have a music director there to kind of have these like taste moments of kind of pulling from things. I think that there's a great way that supervisors and music directors could work together for sure. I think there's a lot of little interesting places that it would overlap, because it's like you're trying to tell a story. And it's like when I work with music, when you're talking about working to picture, you're just trying to contribute to that vision. Like that's the whole thing. It's like, how do I musically reinforce that, heighten it, do whatever everybody wants with it? So, you know, if you bring more people together that share that vision, I think you're gonna get deeper, more continuity. It's gonna be like more on point. It's gonna come across in really different ways, maybe. And again, I think it's just because so many roles are just being like, hey, can you cover this, or can you help us with that? I do think that we're gonna see more and more of it, to be honest. I definitely think that's the case.
Yeah, there's a great film out right now on Apple TV called Coda. And I know that was a situation where there was a music producer composer slash songwriter involved, and they were trying to make this audio experience because it involved a cappella choirs. And it's a story about a deaf family with one daughter that can hear and who loves singing. So anyways, you know, the listening aspect of that film is so important to the storytelling. So I think they made the right move in getting a music producer slash music director involved. You know, the name of this has changed so much. You know, you think of music, there's executive music director, you know, T-Bone Burnett, I think, uses that term. So it changes and everybody kind of does similar things, but the name of the role keeps changing. But I want to jump into some music because you guys brought some great stuff. So I'm going to start with a song that Liza brought. It's called Don't Kill Dub by Rob featuring Sony Sanchez. So let's hear it.
Sometimes I wonder what to say to you now in the soft afternoon air as you hold us all in a single death. I say, where is your fire? I say, where is your fire? You got to find it and pass it on. You got to find it and pass it on from you to me, from me to her to him, from the son to the father, from the brother to the sister, from the daughter to the mother, from the mother to the child. I say, where is your fire? I say, where is your fire? Can't you smell it coming out of our past? The fire of living, not dying. The fire of loving, not killing. The fire of blackness, not gangster shadows. Where is our beautiful fire that gave light to the world? The fire of pyramids, the fire that burned through the holes of slave ships and made us breathe. The fire that made guts into chitlins. The fire that took rhythms and made jazz. The fire of sit-ins and marches that made us jump boundaries and barriers. The fire that took street talk and sounds and made righteous Imhotep raps. Where is your fire? The torch of life, full of Nzinga and Nat Turner and Garvey and Du Bois and Fannie Lou Hamer and Martin and Malcolm and Mandela. Sister, sister, brother, 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 come, catch your fire, don't kill, hold your fire, don't kill, learn your fire, don't kill, be the fire, don't kill, catch the fire, and burn with eyes that see our souls walking, singing, yeah, building, laughing, learning, yes, loving, yes, teaching, being, hey, young brother, hey, young sister, here is my hand, catch the fire and live.
Liza, I really want to know why you selected this song, because it's really interesting, because I hear the poem by Sonia, and I know it was recently used in Lovecraft Country, that Laura Cartman and Raphael Sadiq made that opera piece. I don't know if this is in reference to what you were just building up to, but when I heard the poem, I was like, oh my gosh, this is in that opera piece in Lovecraft. So what's the story behind this song?
So this is probably a good example of an opportunity that I did get to crate dig really deeply, because the piece is used in Lovecraft Country, and then it was turned into an opera for the end of the show. I thought that was brilliant that Laura wanted to do that, Laura and Raphael. This is a record that I've had in my collection. It's like kind of, I don't know how rare it is. I don't think it costs a fortune on Discogs or anything like that, but it's something that I had. Rob is an artist from France, I believe, who was part of that crew around Air and was on the label Record Makers. And so I think this came out on that, but it was a vinyl only B-side, you know, inside track on the B-side. I never had it on, it is on Spotify and all the streaming services now, but for a long time it wasn't. Anyway, it's a poem from the 60s by Sonia Sanchez, who was, you know, an activist and poet, and still is, actually, she's alive. And then it was remixed by this guy, Rob, from France. And then in the 90s on KCRW, I had a show that featured spoken word and poetry. It was called Man on the Moon. And so I amassed an incredible collection of spoken word records, whether it was poetry or recordings of plays and excerpts from films, or I recorded my own actors and poets and stuff like that. It was really different and weird and a little time capsule. But anyway, I had a great collection. So when I got hired on Lovecraft Country, the writers wanted to put in a lot of spoken word and poetry. And I was delighted by that. I didn't realize that was gonna be such a strong theme throughout the series until I started getting into it. And when they called me and asked me for some suggestions, it was such a pleasure, because how often do you get asked to like look for poetry as a music supervisor? So I was so excited, and I sent them a bunch of great things, and they chose this for that scene. It worked really beautifully with the fire happening, and then, you know, cutting between the fire and Atticus beating up thugs, and I just was thrilled by it. I just loved it.
it's a beautiful piece. Thank you so much for bringing it. And yeah, if everybody hasn't seen Lovecraft on HBO, go check it out. You can see all this examples of how it's used in the show. At the top of our show, I played the track Bored by Billie Eilish, which Aaron co-wrote. And Aaron, I just want to know how has your life changed since meeting Billie and Phineas, and what have they contributed to your career?
I mean, I think if you're fortunate enough to be around an artist of both of their magnitude, it does impact your life for the better. Just the experiences, you know, like the things that I've been able to do with them, the you know, like all these bucket list things in SNL, you know, like things that you only hope that one day you would be at the Grammys doing like a performance with a choir. I mean, just like really wild, fun stuff, you know? And yeah, it was definitely a turning point, that song. It was really early on. It was before, you know, like her career was, I guess it was always erupting, I feel like, but it was very, very early on. We wrote the song together. She was 13 at the time. She was like, and sings like she does today, which is terrifying. And you know, we did the song, and then it was placed in 13 Reasons Why, and that first, you know, season of that. And it really caught on. And it was a really wild soundtrack for it to be on as well. So yeah, I mean, I look back at that as a very pivotal moment because it opened a lot of doors, obviously, just being attached and close to both that family, just how amazing they are. So yeah, it's a very special song to me for that reason.
Shout out to Season Kent, the music supervisor of 13 Reasons Why. So Aaron, you have firsthand experience about the impact a music supervisor can have on an artist. Can you just talk bit about how things have, what that experience is like of having music synced like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's any of these opportunities where you can just throw gas on the fire. I mean, you see it happen over and over, and it's hard right now to even think of because there's so many examples of an artist that breaks out based on some huge placement. And it's usually because supervisors are such huge fans of music. They hear something like, oh my gosh, people have to hear this. And then it just, everybody else gets it. It's this amazing opportunity that can be given. And I'm not sure. I'm actually really curious. I mean, I assume maybe sometimes some of these newer artists get placed when somebody's dreamt up a huge spot and they're like, yeah, you can't afford that, but check this out. This is pretty cool. And some new artist gets a shot and people really connect with it. I think anytime you can make an association with music, think back about music that I grew up loving, like really, you know, like the formative music, it's because there's an association with it, right? It's, I was feeling heartbroken. It's like the first time you like felt like your heart was broken. It's just like the most devastating thing you could ever, ever, ever happen. You're like, how do people go on? And but you remember like what it smells like. You remember what the day felt like. I mean, you remember like all these like sensory strange things. There's something incredibly powerful about associating a song with a visual. And I think that is it, for whatever reason, it's a really a great way to accelerate people's awareness of an artist. And it's completely life-changing for people over and over again, because people are passively watching a show or actively watching a show. And then they discover something that they never, you know, accidental discovery is one of the coolest things that can happen, I think. You're like, oh my gosh, I heard this song. And then you feel like you have to tell people. And then it just spreads, you know?
Liza, do you have a story from helping an artist kind of break with a placement or anything like that?
Gosh, yeah. I mean, there have been a lot. Oh, but I feel on the spot right now. And
it's hard to,
That's
but it's like you hear about it, like everybody's like, oh, it's all because of that placement. You're like, no way.
I mean, I guess that's
the kind of question I would love to, think about.
Yeah, you can think about it. But I guess in the reverse of that is, have you ever been contacted by an artist just thanking you for that moment? Like, were they recognizing the effort that you put in to help them get placed like that?
Oh yeah, constantly. I mean, I don't know about constantly, but there are a lot of times when you get like a little thank you note or an email or flowers or wine or.
Yeah, because it's such a big deal for an artist to have that much exposure. Just, you know, just boom, they're like, whoa, all these people experienced my music. And you can, it's very hard, I think, within music to find things that are quantifiable. Mm-hmm. We're just always like living in this ether of like, I think it's good. I hope somebody likes it. And then you see all these streams rack up based on a placement and you're like, whoa. This is all based on this single event. That's a very special, rare moment, I think, in our world.
It's rare. I think that's the key word. And it's still even rare because there's plenty of music, great discovery music that we use, but that doesn't make that kind of impact because it's heard way in the background or, right. You know, or the show isn't that popular. I mean, I work on some amazingly popular projects and then tons of that aren't so much, but you're always, it's a numbers game. So you're always just trying to, I love discovery music and having this exact thing happen. This is pretty much makes the whole thing totally But it's the best part, you know.
Yeah, that would be so rewarding if that, like that, that would have to be, I imagine, a very rewarding experience.
Well, speaking of new music, Aaron, you just had a song come out with an artist. Forgive me the if I'm getting the name wrong. Iluka?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Iluka.
Iluka. And the title of the song is Get Free. Before I put it on, why don't you tell me a little bit about your role on this? I know you co-wrote and produced the song. Yeah. And let's hear a little bit about it.
So Iluka's great. I love her. We met, we'd never met in person. We met during all this past year and a half ongoing situation, whatever it may be. She's in Australia. I was working with another BMG artist out there and they sent me some of her music and I was like, whoa, this girl's voice is incredible. Like really interesting, like really unique. So we did a session on Zoom, which is still, again, in that very bizarre category of things that we've done over the past, you know, like year and a half. And that first day we wrote this song, it was really easy. Generally writing on Zoom is incredibly difficult. There's latency, like, you know, you're waiting for the delay of the whatever somebody else is singing to come back to you. It's all these challenges. But we found out that our music, like what we like and our taste align so much that we would just like sit on Zoom for a few hours and like work on these songs. And yeah, this was the first song we did. We were super excited about it. I'm now executive producing her album. This is the second song that's come out for her, but just really excited to find such an amazing talent. You know, it's so hard. It's ever harder to find when you hear a voice where you go, that's Iluka. Like, it's like, you know, like you can just recognize that voice where the second you hear it and the way it prints on, you know. So that she has something very unique there that I personally love and really resonate with.
Amazing. Well, let's hear it. This is Get Free by Iluka.
All right. Put all of my pennies in a roll of the dice. 'Cause lately I've been ready for a lightning bolt to strike. I'm a fool's paradise. Trying every day in my own way to get free. I'm out here trying, I'm dying to get free. I'm out here trying, I'm dying to get free. I'm out here trying, I'm dying. But you never ever knew a girl like me. Swallowed up the moon, there's a light in my chest. Wasn't gonna follow, so I walked to the open edge. Made a midnight. Trying every day in my own way to get free. I'm out of trying, I'm dying to get free. I'm out of trying, I'm dying to get free. I'm out of trying, I'm dying. But you never ever knew a girl like me to get free. I'm out of trying, I'm dying to get free. I'm out of trying, I'm dying to get free. I'm out of trying, I'm dying. But you never ever knew a girl like me. I'm just out of trying every day to get free. I'm just out of dying every day to get free. I'm just out of trying every day to get free. I'm just out of dying every day to get free. I'm just out of dying every day to get free. I'm just out of dying every day to get free. I'm just out of trying every day to get free. I'm just out of dying every day to get free. But you never ever knew a girl like me to get free. I'm out of trying, I'm dying to get free. I'm out of trying, I'm dying to get free. I'm out of trying.
Thank you so much for bringing that track in. It was great. It's a really, really unique sound to her voice, and I really appreciate that you brought that one in. Liza, I wanted to know in general, and maybe this could be a question for both of you, but Liza can start, is what's something that you would like to work on next? What's something that you're like looking forward to where you'd like, I know you said a musical or something like that would be really exciting to work on.
Honestly, what I would so love to work on goes back to the whole crate digging thing that we talked about before. I'm a fanatic of Latin music. And so I'm lucky to have been able to work on Narcos and in the very beginning, Y Tu Mama Tambien. And I have a lot of friends in Latin America. And so any story, you know, since Latin culture is growing, I feel like there are more and more opportunities for Latin music. And I'm just personally such a huge fan and would always want to do something like that. I also just love just far-flung places. 70s Africa, let's do James Bond in, you know, I don't know, you know, just like weird stuff. But I really do want to work on ethnic projects. I really do. And I love, you know, a lot of the stuff that I work on now, like Outer Banks is a good example of what we were talking about a few minutes ago, where, you know, a lot of new artists get exposed. The show is super popular on Netflix with young adults and the playlists are huge. And so, I don't know, that's killer. I love all that. And I get jobs like that. But yeah. I mean, it would be great to work on it. I mean, I grew up in musical theater, so that would be fun. But really, I like, you know, I would love to do more ethnic stuff just because I'm just such a fan.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, I love, you know, bringing your passion, you know, if that's Latin music to your work, of course, it'll just benefit us all because I'm sure you've got a wealth of amazing tracks for all of us to hear. You also brought a piece by Calexico, which I'll be playing in just a second, but I want Aaron to answer the question if there's something that you specifically want to work on next.
You know, I've been thinking about it since you said it earlier, the fact that, you know, some people are now using executive music director versus music director. Executive music director actually makes, again, a lot of sense to me as a title when I think about kind of being somebody to help tie the pieces together. And I love that. I mean, I love being an executive producer on an album. I love music directing for a live show. I like taking all the pieces and putting them together. So, you know, I was very fortunate to get to work on this Billie Eilish documentary just because it's such a tight-knit group of us that work on everything. And then I worked on Sour Prom for Olivia Rodrigo. And I was like, wow, like this whole thing is new-ish, but it can really apply to, you know, a lot of different cinematic, you know, television things that I just love contributing in a way. And I love working with a team of talented individuals and like really collaborating. I think some people are like, I like to collaborate and they like, don't, you know, but it's like I really enjoy collaborating and bouncing ideas and getting collectively like, hey, we're on the same page, like this is our vision. And I think that, you know, film or television, you have an opportunity to really go in on that. And it's almost like this, in my mind, from what I'm used to, it's a bloated version of making an album. There's so many more pieces that you couldn't do it all by yourself. It's just impossible. You wouldn't make it, but everybody has to be working together. So I love the idea of working on another project with RJ. Like we had so much fun making that documentary. It's like, I'd love to do another project with him just to see if I can help contribute musically to his vision. And I think that both of us, we have this opportunity that we get to express musically things that maybe sometimes directors or executives can't quite articulate it, but you're trying to get inside there and be like, what is it? And you find it and it's like this big hurrah moment and you're like, whoa, like this is it. And they're very excited and you go, oh, okay, I get it, I know what they're going after. I love that, that process of discovery, getting in somebody's mind and being like, what, how can I help you? Cause you can't quite say what you want to say, which is probably like why I like working with artists too. Like, you know, like writing songs and they have an idea and you're like, oh, that's really cool. Like, how about, like, how can we twist it this way or that way? There's so much overlap in what I do, being a music producer, a writer, a music director. It's in my mind that it's all just blurred into this thing of problem solving and creating and working with people you like to work with. And like, I just want to do more of that, honestly.
Yeah, so I think a goal for everybody. Work with the people you like to work with.
Yeah.
Nice absolutely. People. Only nice. People.
Only right. Nice people. It's yeah. Just like, it's like, that's it.
Cool. But we're lucky, Aaron, to be able to make those choices. We're very lucky.
Oh, so beyond fortunate. Yeah. It's unbelievable. I mean, very, very, very true. So,
well, let's hear the track from Calexico that Liza brought for us. It's called Dead Man's Will.
One, two, three. Give this song.
Now, Liza, why did you choose this song in particular? What does it mean to you?
This one is a big Friday Night Lights placement. You know, recently there's been, I mean, well, that's just that was my first episodic project as a music supervisor. And so I got very lucky with that because I love that show. And anyway, this was just a awesome, huge placement in Friday Night Lights. I mean, I don't know what more I can talk about it. It's Calexico and Iron and Wine. It's a combination, a collaboration. And it's in this incredible scene where the Riggins brothers, like literally like get in a fight, they're brothers, and they get in this massive fight and they destroy each other and the house around them. And it's a wonderful juxtaposition with all this like insane action, but this really quiet, mellow, beautiful song. So it's a memorable moment from Friday Night Lights.
I love that you brought something from early on. Like you said, this is one of the first shows. This was the first episodic show you worked on?
Yeah.
As a musician? Wow. I mean, what a show to launch on.
Seriously. I can't
believe it.
Yeah. I love that. That kind of early career lies with this Calexico, sorry, and Iron and Wine. Thank you for adding that. Next up, I'm going to play a piece by Aaron that he co-wrote. It's called Tie Me Down by an artist named Griffin, featuring Ellie Dewey. Ellie Dewey, thank you. Yeah. tell us about this song. Why did you bring this song into us?
I think it's an interesting song in that you never know when songs will have a life. You create things, and I think in like what we're talking about, so many times an artist puts out a song and a year later it gets placed and then all of a sudden it blows up. This was a song that I wrote just with some friends, some incredible, I mean, like Sarah Aaron's incredible top like writer, my friend UC, a producer, we did it and we just like got together for a couple hours and made a song. And that week Griffin was like, I love this. I want to put this out. And then it went through a process where Sarah Aarons has one of the most incredible voices on the planet. And I think somewhere in the vicinity of 25 different artists cut the song. And it finally landed on Ellie Dewey, who also has been one of the only people that ends up singing the songs that Sarah writes. It's just different. I mean, you know, I work with Banks, you know, I have songs with Banks. I have sing, you know, like that song with Billy. Yeah, she's incredible. Like Jillian's just the best. And I worked on like, you know, her first three albums, but just to bring something totally different. Like this is like a straight up like DJ song, you know? And during this whole quarantine, it had this moment in TikTok where people were just, you know, like singing at the top of their lungs, and it was just like a really a happy thing in the midst of a very bizarre time. So yeah,
well, I love it. Let's hear it. Here is Tie Me Down by Griffin featuring Ellie Dewey.
Don't lie, I know you've been thinking it. And two times you let it slip from your lips. You got too much pride to make any promises. Thinking that we got time and you wanna keep it in. I want you out in the pouring rain. I want you down on your knees. Praying to God that I feel the same. I'm right here, baby, so please. Hold me up, tie me down. Cause I never wanna leave your side. I swear to never let you down. And it's been eating me alive. You can take me home, you can never let me go. Hold me up, and tie me down, down. And tie me down, down. And tie me down, down. And tie me down. Fall at my feet. Don't hide, you're wasting your energy. You're not shy, so baby, it's useless. So don't try, cause you'll end up losing it. I want you out in the pouring rain. I want you down on your knees. Praying to God that I feel the same. I'm right here, baby, so please. Hold me up, tie me down.
Tie me down, down, down. And tie me down. and I'll put my hands around your neck. Cause nobody wins these waiting games. You push and you pull, but you should stay.
Now, we've reached the end of the show, and I asked this of all my guests. What was the first album you purchased, and what was the last thing you listened to?
Aaron, you start.
Okay, I know. I'm like, okay. First album I purchased. I was lucky because my parents have incredible taste in music, but I think the first thing that I bought was... TLC, Crazy Sexy Cool. Yeah. I remember that. It was either that or Eric Clapton from the Cradle, like early 90s Eric Clapton, like MTV Unplugged maybe. I remember I had that on tape, and it was one of those. And then the last thing I listened to, I was listening to Phineas's new album, and it's really good. It's so good.
Can't wait. Yeah. Liza, what about you?
Okay. Tusk by Fleetwood Mac was the first.
Ooh. Hard to compete with that.
Yeah, I love that album. Can I give you two answers for the last thing?
Of course, yeah.
So yesterday, all weekend, you know, I listen to all my new music, and so I found a new jazz album that is just really good from beginning to end. It's by Greg Foat. It's English, and it's something about cats. I don't know, but every single track is fantastic, and it there's a slight sense of like Bitches Brew, Miles Davis era, but I love it. I think it's just evocative and beautifully recorded, and the songs, the melodies, and it's beautiful jazz. It's improvisational, yet it's got a great form. I'm really into it, but that's just, you know, last 48 hours, 24 hours. So, you know, and the other thing that I'm just sort of obsessing over is a Puerto Rican artist from the 60s called German Rosario or Herman.
Rosario. Yeah. So good.
Oh, well, it's from the 60s. I mean, it's super obscure.
Okay.
But it's, I don't know if you pronounce it Herman. But it's spelled like German Rosario. And I love it. It's just beautiful music. It's mountain music. It's like country music from Puerto Rico, Jibaro. So it's like worker music and very rural, and it's just pretty melodies, plaintive. Yeah. So
I love it. And thank you so much I love these shout outs that people give at the end of the show, because you get a little bit of history of like what they first got and then what they're currently listening to, which is always exciting. Well, unfortunately we have to end the show, but thank you so much for both being on Studio Soundtracks from DubLab Radio. Our outro music is going to be another track that Liza brought to us. It's called Do Your Thing by Leroy Sibbles. So I'll let everybody enjoy that on our way out. And both, thank you so much for being on Studio Soundtracks.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Like the man say, each and every day, this is another. Hey, hey, hey.